This is the morning brief from the Economic Times.
Lockdowns in themselves have not done very much, if anything, to help curb COVID.
The likelihood of next wave or fourth wave in 2 months is very low.
I think India should be quite confident that they don't need to be overly worried about a next COVID wave or a new variant. Don't think there's a very strong evidence for the use of masks at all in preventing transmission.
The mask mandate for school-age children should be done away with.
That was Dr. Aseem Malhotra and Dr. Chandrakant Laharia. Frankly, I'm heaving a sigh of relief. After experiencing the pandemic for 2 whole years, this is quite a breather. Exactly 2 years ago, on March 24, 2020, India announced a 21-day nationwide COVID lockdown that eventually got extended several times. And since then, our lives have not been the same. Now, after 3 COVID waves, life seems to be limping back to normal. New COVID cases are down to around 1,700 a day. Deaths have dropped to negligible and hospitalizations have reduced drastically. In view of this, the Home Ministry on Wednesday announced an end to all its COVID-19 containment measures under the Disaster Management Act from March 31st. Though health advisories and face masks continue. But in China, South Korea, and a few other countries, cases are on the rise even as we speak. The World Health Organization reminds us that the pandemic is still not over. In such a scenario, how should we in India expect to live with the coronavirus or any of its new variants? I'm your host, Kiran Somvanshi from The Economic Times. It's Thursday, March 24th. You're listening to COVID Break the Chain on The Morning Brief. In this episode, I chat with leading cardiologist Dr. Aseem Malhotra, who is speaking to us from London, and Dr. Chandrakant Laharia, who is an eminent epidemiologist. They provide candid answers to common concerns like, is it time to be worried about a fourth wave? Do we need booster shots? How long do we wear masks? And of course, what health measures would fortify us from any future waves? Even as things get better in India, cases are rising in other parts of the world. So I asked Dr. Malhotra a million-dollar question that is on everyone's minds right now. Is this a reason to be worried, and are we going to face another lockdown in India?
The first thing to say is now we're over 2 years well into this pandemic, and there's a lot more data that we have now that we didn't have at the beginning. And one of the things I think that's really important to understand and mention is that ultimately lockdowns in themselves have not done very much, if anything, to help curb COVID and reduce mortality. And there's a recent paper published, it reveals that actually, in terms of preventing COVID deaths, it's probably lockdowns, strict lockdowns, have essentially maybe prevented 1 in 500 people from dying from COVID. I think what's reassuring with the evolution of this virus, and certainly what we've seen in the UK, is that the most recent variant, Omicron, seems to be significantly less lethal, probably at least 30 to 50% less lethal in terms of mortality compared to previous variants. And I think that's a good thing, because I think we can be more open and having a discussion about the fact that lockdowns themselves haven't had a big effect and in reducing COVID mortality with a virus that now has even less lethality. I'm a bit surprised, to be honest, what I've been seeing happening in China. I think personally, this is a grossly exaggerated response in China. Videos of members of the police or whoever else walking around in hazmat suits. I think this just exaggerates fear, and that in itself actually is actually very harmful for people as well.
While that was extremely relieving to hear, I asked Dr. Laharia, does he feel the same? What are his thoughts on the likelihood and severity of a fourth wave, which has been predicted by some studies?
Well, so in pandemic or epidemics, the context matter a lot. And what we are seeing that India's context is very different from some of the other countries which are seeing either uptick in the cases or a fresh wave. As far as a recent study which projected that India might experience fourth COVID-19 wave starting sometimes in June 2022, which might peak in August 2022 and end in October 2022. Many epidemiologists and public health experts have spoken that the pandemic or epidemic projections are not mere mathematical analysis. They require more nuanced approach of what was the vaccination coverage, when was the last wave happened, which population group was affected. So that projection, in my opinion, are merely an intelligent guess and nothing more than that, because India's situation is very different. India has a high seroprevalence after second wave. 95% of adult population have received at least one shot of COVID-19 vaccine. And then recently there was an Omicron wave, which would have affected, as per some estimate, 60 to 70% population again. So putting all of these things together, the likelihood of next wave or fourth wave in a few months is very low. It's possible, but it's not possible to predict with the confidence that when it would happen. That's one part. Second part is that what is happening in China is different, because China followed a zero COVID approach, and through that approach, natural exposure have been low, and the vaccine which have been used in China, and inactivated vaccines, those are some of the vaccines with the least efficacy amongst the authorized vaccines. So China's situation is very different. And the final part is, what we need to remember that the two shots of COVID-19 vaccines continue to provide protection from severe disease and hospitalization. And considering a large proportion of India's population has already been exposed to the natural virus or received COVID-19 vaccines, putting all of these together, even if cases rise in the country, if we go by currently available scientific evidence, we can be very confident in saying that the severity is going to be really low. But final part is that one of the unknown is that emergence of new variant, its characteristic. No one can predict when a new variant would emerge, what would be the characteristic of that variant, and that will determine everything.
So I guess the crucial point to note is, if there is no new variant, we can be fairly confident that there would not be another major wave, or at least a deadlier one. But I asked Dr. Malhotra, what are the chances of a new variant emerging, and how do we mentally prepare for it?
The natural history in general with these sorts of viruses, they tend to become less problematic with time. And I think we've seen that already with Omicron. But I also think that one of the problems that's happened across this whole pandemic has been, you talk about preparing mentally. I think people also need some reassurance now. I think India should be quite confident that they don't need to be overly worried about a next COVID wave or a new variant causing problems. My personal area of interest as well has been trying to determine what are the characteristics of individuals that makes them more vulnerable to dying from COVID. And I think one of the major parts that's been missed from the discussion in the mainstream is the fact that there's a huge gradient of mortality risk according to age, which differs by about 1,000-fold. So children, young adults, their risk of dying from COVID, even pre-vaccination, was about 1 in 40,000. You get up to people who are in their 50s and 60s, that then becomes about 1 in 500. And then, of course, the very elderly are much more vulnerable traditionally from dying from COVID. So that's a really important discussion that needs to be had, because it also helps people have more honest and transparent information and stops the exaggerated fear, which you've already alluded to, can have a huge negative impact on people's mental health.
Dr. Malhotra raises an important point on mental health. In the last 2 years, the virus has affected our mental health almost as much as it has affected us physically. I also asked Dr. Laharia his thoughts on it. Did he think people are more comfortable talking about mental health since the pandemic?
Importance of mental health services is really profound learning from ongoing pandemic. We have started seeing mental health as integral part of physical health, but unfortunately, mental health services are associated with some stigma and those services are not available. A good part in this pandemic, in spite of all the challenges, has been that people started talking about mental health. The stigma which was associated with talking about mental health challenges is somewhat less now with this pandemic, and we should use this as an opportunity to increase use of mental health services.
I hope the government takes note. And what about COVID-appropriate behavior?
Namaskar. Our country and the whole world are facing COVID-19 challenges. COVID-19 has not yet ended. ऐसे में हमारा फर्ज है कि हम सतर्क रहें, इसलिए जब तक दवाई नहीं तब तक कोई ढिलाई नहीं।
I bet we are all tired of hearing this tune. Plus, there are so many contradictory opinions on masks to further confuse us. Frankly, I know people who are fed up of masks.
Unfortunately, this compulsion of wearing masks is impacting our ability to breathe freely. How can you make masks mandatory in a country like India, where people have to work in 40-degree summers? It is practically impossible. I honestly feel this mindless implementation needs to be reversed.
So I asked Dr. Malhotra if it was time to stop wearing them.
The evidence for masks' benefit is, if it's there, is very minor. And there's also potential harms with masks, infecting mental health, increased risk of bacterial infections, people not using masks properly, touching their face, etc. My personal view is I don't think there's a very strong evidence for the use of masks at all in preventing transmission. And therefore, and there are definite harms. I personally wouldn't be recommending the use of cloth masks. I think the data is very poor quality of benefit. And again, I think it adds to the heightened fear. I think people being sensible, social distancing when there are waves, all that, avoiding mass gatherings, I think these are important interventions that I'm sure will have an impact. But I really don't think there is much evidence that the masks do anything.
And this is what Dr. Lahiriya said about where India stands right now when it comes to COVID-appropriate behavior.
So what we need to remember that the importance of COVID-appropriate behavior is high when there is a ongoing transmission in that setting and high rate of transmission in that setting. So the mask wearing or any adoption of COVID-appropriate behavior should be dependent or aligned with the level of transmission in that setting. Now, we know that number of daily COVID-19 cases in India had gone down to like 22 months low. And that itself indicates that level of transmission is low. So if people have stopped wearing masks, it is not an immediate concern. What is more important that we need to develop that kind of societal approach that if cases are rising, people increase their mask wearing habit. And if cases are declined, they are not following those mask mandate, that's fine. What we need to remember is it's important that the normal people return to the normal life in many ways. They start their economic activity, the school should be open. I am of the opinion from an epidemiological perspective that it is time that in India, the government may consider to removing mask mandated from the open space. So there is a need for developing a graded approach to give relaxation in COVID-appropriate behavior, and mask mandate for people in open space can be removed first. Then mask mandate for people in the closed space, but people who are vaccinated can be removed next. But most importantly, what I think is should be done immediately with such a low transmission in the country, that the mask mandate for school-age children should be done away with. We know children are at low risk of moderate to severe disease. They have already been exposed, and there are risks associated with mask wearing. There would definitely be a point of probably a few months away from now when most of the COVID-appropriate behavior are going to be voluntary rather than mandatory by the law.
Since we are talking about COVID, we can't not talk about vaccines. COVID and vaccines have kind of become synonymous. And in India right now, senior citizens are being given booster doses, and the 12 to 14-year-olds have also begun their vaccinations. So I asked both the doctors, how did they see this? With 60% of the eligible population fully vaccinated, should vaccine compliance be still adhered to? Should we queue up for booster doses?
Interestingly, the Indian government actually refused to allow the mRNA Pfizer jab to be distributed amongst India because Pfizer wanted indemnification from harms. Now, that's very interesting. It actually may prove to be one of the best things the Modi government has done. Because, and this is an evolving space, we are seeing unprecedented levels of reported harms from the mRNA jab in the UK and the US. I think the other thing to mention as well, this type of vaccine that's being used is very different to traditional vaccines. I'm a huge fan of vaccines. I think vaccines have been one of medicine's greatest achievements globally. Traditional vaccines, whether it's MMR, whether it's polio, these vaccines are estimated to save about 6 million lives a year. And I know India also has a big problem in terms of distribution of many vaccines in people who are vulnerable. But this new vaccines for COVID in terms of efficacy is not anywhere close to the efficacy of other traditional vaccines. Does appear certainly to help prevent serious illness and death in vulnerable people. But the issue of harms is still evolving. And I think that that's something that we need to be more aware of, and we need to have a more honest, open discussion about that as things evolve.
What we know that 2 shots of COVID-19 vaccines are recommended for all adults. They will protect from severe disease and hospitalization. Then also lately, Indian government opened vaccination for 15 to 17 years, and then a few days ago for 12 to 14 years as well. So vaccines are recommended for a specific age group, and each of those individuals should go and get vaccines. There is a definitely very important role in reducing the impact of infection due to SARS-CoV-2 and also halting the pandemic, and the vaccines are playing an important role. As far as boosters are concerned, we need to remember that every setting is different. In epidemiology, context matter, and India's context is very different from many other countries. We know that India had a severe second wave, natural infection, then they received vaccine. And this is called something called hybrid immunity. In COVID-19 pandemic, we have learned, and that's what everyone agree, that hybrid immunity is any given day better than the immunity provided by vaccines alone or by natural infection. So India has hybrid immunity, and that's why people with 2 shots are protected. And that's why Indian government has not decided to administer booster shot for a population younger than 60 years. It may not be needed. Moreover, what is to be remembered that the most recent wave, third wave in India, happened in January, February. It affected many people, a large proportion of population. And we know that after natural infection, people are protected at least for 3 months, or most logically 6 months or even longer. So there is no urgency in India to administer booster shot. Final point regarding the choice of vaccines, India has used mostly Covishield, which is Oxford AstraZeneca viral vector vaccine. This is a proven efficacy. 2 shots continue to provide protection. Second vaccine being used in India, inactivated vaccine, Covaxin, is also highly efficacious. So this is very assuring, and there is no rush to administer booster shots in the country. I personally think that there is a unnecessary demand from certain section of people that children need to be vaccinated before they can attend school, or there are people, parents are little apprehensive that children are at high risk. So I want to utilize this opportunity to convey that in any case, the level of transmission in India is really low, so we need not to worry. Second part is children are already protected. They do get infection. They got infection in the previous 3 waves also, but they do not develop severe outcome. And it's time that we as a society take decision and start sending our children to the school with the required and relevant COVID-appropriate behavior at that point of time.
This would resonate with many parents. Here's one I spoke to.
Being a parent, I feel that the decision to go back to offline schooling is proving to be right for us. So very recently, the school in which my daughter studies, they decided to go in for hybrid mode of schooling. But I had been really concerned, about whether safety norms would be followed at school and what about social distancing and all, because we can't be expecting young kids to follow these procedures. So I'm sure many other parents would also be sharing my concerns. But we decided to give it a try. So today, it's like over a month that she has been attending regular offline school. And I'm happy to say that gradually our concerns have started dissipating.
While we have established that vaccines can reduce the risk or severity of the illness, I also wanted to understand what were the other factors or underlying illnesses that led to an increase in the death rate, especially in India. Here's what Dr. Malhotra said.
When you look at the deaths from COVID, 90% of the deaths actually happened in countries where more than 50% of the population were overweight or obese. Now, in India, it's slightly different because Indians generally tend to develop the conditions associated with worse outcomes from COVID, such as type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, and much lower levels of body fat. India has a real problem with heart disease, cardiovascular disease, with 52% of deaths from heart attack and stroke in India happening in people under the age of 70, so prematurely. And of course, that's predominantly amongst the middle classes. So this is a huge problem for India moving forward. In fact, it's been estimated that unless this is dealt with properly, this is going to cost the Indian economy the equivalent of $2 trillion by 2030. So my approach moving forward would be a public health focus on curtailing the consumption of the types of foods we should be focusing on something called metabolic health. And the primary approach to improving those metabolic health markers is pure dietary changes. Many Indians have moved away from the traditional diet and are eating a lot of snack foods, a lot of sugar. And this is a big problem. It's a big, big problem. How can people optimize their resilience to infection? There's a number of different mechanisms. Excess body fat itself is what we call a substrate for chronic inflammation in the body. So see it almost like a toxin to the body, a chronic toxin. And anything that causes chronic inflammation is also going to affect the immune system. So we've had, it's been well established now that the acute respiratory distress syndrome that kills, unfortunately, many people with COVID through pneumonia, it seems to be exacerbated in people who have obesity, who have excess body fat. Another mechanism, again, is high blood glucose and insulin resistance. And just in very simple terms, people try and understand, I think just viruses and bacteria in particular, traditionally, thrive off high blood glucose. So I think those are the two things that people need to try and understand. So what do people do? What do I advise my patients? What do I advise people in the Indian community who have Indian diets? I think if we were to break it down in simple terms for most people to understand, the two big issues are, when it comes to food, are ultra-processed foods, which I'll define for you in a second, and low-quality carbohydrates. So ultra-processed foods, there's a very good international definition now called the NOVA classification, is essentially any packaged food that has five or more ingredients, usually with additives and preservatives, which is essentially full of sugar, unhealthy oils, excessive salt to some degree. And these are the types of foods that are thought to be driving both chronic inflammation and obesity through the fact that they may be mildly addictive. And then low quality carbohydrates as well. So these are essentially carbohydrates that lack fiber. These are your breads, your pastas, too much rice consumption, which is a big problem I know in certain parts of India as well. So minimizing the consumption of these sorts of foods will rapidly improve people's metabolic health and weight. Metabolic syndrome can be reversed in up to 50% of people within a few weeks of just changing diet alone. So the effect is quite rapid. And this is, I think, an approach that also needs to be backed with policy changes that certainly curb the consumption through the, call it 3 A's in public health, the availability, the acceptability, and the affordability. And one of the things that the government could do is basically stop the advertising, ban the advertising of these sorts of foods, whether it's through TV advertising or whether through internet on-demand services. That's what really needs to be done.
Well, so next time, think twice before reaching out for that pack of chips or that bottle of Coke. In his book, Till We Win, Dr. Laharia chronicles India's response to the COVID-19 pandemic.
India should be preparing itself, not just for COVID virus, but for the economic devastation that is coming.
Go Corona! Go Corona! Go Corona! Go Corona! Go Corona! Corona go!
Corona go!
Corona go!
Corona go!
Hamara desh corona se bhi jeetega aur vikas ke naye aayam bhi hasil karega.
So I asked Dr. Laharia, how long till we actually win?
So the key point is that we have to define what is victory in this fight against viruses or pathogens or pandemics. We are definitely sure that pandemic would be over, but we are also sure that the virus is not going anywhere. SARS-CoV-2 will be with us. In that context, the key would be that we can effectively reduce or mitigate the impact of ongoing transmission on the citizens. So in a sense, the easiest definition of victory would be that virus would be with us, but the impact of virus on the citizen would be very minimal or almost none, but definitely slightly higher than zero. That's one part. Second part is that the circulation of virus in any part of the world should not be having much impact on the normal life, and that would be another victory. But more bigger label, I would say that the real victory against the pandemic would be when we derive the lessons and put those lessons for the corrective measures, for the interventions to strengthen the health system. So these are the three things I think we need to define as a society, what we want to see as a victory. And from my perspective, I would say we should not consider victory against pandemic over till we use the learning to strengthen health system in that setting and context of India, to strengthen India's healthcare system. And that will be the real victory after this pandemic.
Thank you, doctors, for enlightening us. I have always thought COVID meant different things to different people. And this talk did bridge that gap between the academic and the practical, the studied and the experienced, and the estimated and the feared. I'm sure these words of health experts do render a lot of hope, assurance, and confidence to all of us scarred by the pandemic. They do have a strong message for public health policymakers to plan not just for the next wave, but to plan for building the immunity of the population, reducing obesity, and curbing junk food consumption. We have been living with COVID with a lot of fear, hesitation, and uncertainty. Now we can consider living with it without apprehensions, without the stress, and hopefully soon without breathing from our masks. Science is offering reasons for business owners to be more confident of the future, for parents to send their kids to schools, and for office goers to look at easier commutes. What started as a physical virus changed our behavior and eventually gripped our minds. It is time now to break the chain once again. Well, that's all for today. You are listening to COVID Break the Chain on the Morning Brief. This episode was produced by my colleague Surbhi Modi from the Economic Times and Saundarya Jayachandran from Awaaz. Sound editor Varun Kapahi from Awaaz. Executive producer Arijit Burman. The Morning Brief airs every Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Thank you and have a good day. All clips used in this episode belong to the respective owners. Credits mentioned in the description.